everyone, and welcome to this episode of Dogs Unknown. I'm Sarah Frazier, joined by fellow host Brian Burton. And this week, we are talking about dogs in urban environments. We're going to discuss some of the most common challenges facing urban dogs, and also some of our favorite hacks for navigating city life to protect and kind of enhance your city dog's welfare. Because let's face it, living in an urban environment can be pretty stressful for dogs and people. To help us with this conversation today, we have two folks who are very skilled and knowledgeable about working with dogs and humans in urban environments. And that is Lauren Jones-Wenzel from Instinct Northern New Jersey and Philadelphia. Welcome, hey, Lauren. Lauren is a certified behavior consultant. And this is Lauren's second time on the podcast. So welcome back.
Thank you.
And we're also joined by Stephanie Collingsworth, who is from Instinct Portland. She is also a certified behavior consultant. And Stephanie, first time on the podcast. So welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
Awesome. So diving right in, I would like to ask everyone, if you, this is a little bit of a weird way to word this question, but if you were forced to wave a magic wand and have the outcome be that either all pet dogs suddenly lived in typical city homes or all pet dogs lived in like a typical kind of country home, which would you pick if the goal was providing the best welfare possible for the most dogs?
Ooh.
Who wants to go first on that one?
So I'm inclined to say for most dogs, a rural environment is in so many ways easier a lot oftentimes. And the urban environment, I feel like if they start there, can be incredibly enriching. I have dogs on both sides of that coin, which is kind of an interesting perspective. My older female, who's 13, has been with me in a very urban environment since I brought her home at 4 weeks. And I actually got her at the train station by my apartment. Someone was selling her, and she was four-week-old little gerbil. So she's been exposed to the noise and traffic and all of that since day one, and is very comfortable and enjoys going for walks and smelling all the smells and going into coffee shops and going into, like, she can do all of that, and she really likes it. My male dog started out in a very rural environment and was, through rescue, came to me. And the adjustment in the other direction was incredibly difficult and still is. And in fact, is part of what has prompted my husband and I to now, after 20 some years, leave a city environment and move to a more rural environment. So it's kind of interesting. I feel like if you were transitioning, I'd rather transition from urban to rural rather than transition from rural to urban. But I think if you were just blanketly picking one, I think my preference in a lot of ways would be the rural.
Fair enough. Yeah. Stephanie, how about you? What are your thoughts?
I think Lauren covered kind of like the two sides of the coin, right? And I agree, kind of going from a more country to urban is a much harder transition. But I also want to like be careful to not encourage the proverbial, all this dog needs is a home in the country, because that also comes with inherent challenges with, you know, the random UPS guy coming up the driveway is the biggest event of the day, that and wildlife and all of the other challenges that come with being in the countryside. So I think it depends, but obviously I think a rural environment is a much more enriching.
Yeah. What do you think, Brian?
I mean, for me, it's sort of a no-brainer that it's the country. I think looking, you know, working with dogs as long as I have in the city, I do think it's pretty challenging, although there are dogs that do really thrive in there. And sort of to what Lauren was talking about, like we had one dog or pit boxer mix Buster who grew up in Harlem. We adopted him. He was still in Harlem, and that dog loved the city. And it's funny, both him and Sammy, though, when we go out to the country, like being out in the country where there wasn't things around. So they'd be outside and they're like, why is there nothing around? They get really hyper-focused on things. Or if there's like one person walking in the distance, they're like way more suspicious than they ever were, you know, in the city. But I would say in general, I would say it's much easier to provide good welfare for dogs in a country environment. I think with an urban environment, it takes active planning and focus to actually make that happen. So it doesn't mean you can't, but you actually have to put some work into it. And I think being able to read your dog and being able to adjust your expectations and your schedule and your activities for your dog so that they do have good welfare in an urban environment. And lots of dogs thrive in an urban environment. So I don't want to, you know, poo-poo that at all, but it does take more thought.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think, you know, we'll have this whole episode will have sort of a broader discussion about what that is and what it looks like. But I would agree, if I had to choose one or the other, magically relocating all pet dogs to the city or to the country, I would say the country, you know, yeah. If we're looking at like what natural behaviors are sort of most important to them and how can those most easily be met. And even if someone doesn't, because we're not talking about necessarily optimal for every dog, you know, we're talking about like best welfare possible for the most number of dogs. So I would agree with country in that case, knowing that, you know, we've lived in urban environments for the last decade plus with dogs, and I think provided them with pretty good welfare. So, but I'm not surprised by that answer from all, you know, all of us sort of leaning in the same direction there. I do think it's a topic that we can sometimes almost dance around or be a little bit uncomfortable with, because again, we don't want to suggest that it's inappropriate for people to have dogs in city environments, but it is something that I think is important for us all to consider, because it's going to make us aware of and be more mindful about how we own and take care of dogs in city environments.
How are we defining urban? Because I'm kind of thinking about suburbia is sort of the middle ground. So are we just sort of excluding suburbia? Are we thinking more like downtown Manhattan urban is the environment we're picturing right now for this discussion?
Yeah, urban okay. Environments are sort of the question here.
So like downtown, I've been in Portland, like downtown Portland.
Okay. More likely to live in an apartment building or condo, more likely not to have a backyard, more likely to, you know, have busy shared sidewalks and that kind of thing. Yeah. So, but if we believe that in most cases, most dogs could have a better life living outside the city, should we really be continuing to have dogs in the city? I think we've already answered that question. But, you know, what are people's thoughts on that? Like, is it appropriate, ethically speaking, for us to have dogs as people who live in cities? Should we be saying, like, I'm going to bring a dog into this environment when I know that it's probably a little bit more challenging for them to live here versus living in a home outside the city? Does anyone want to tackle that question?
I think it comes down to like environment, habitat. Can you create an enriching, safe environment for your dog where they can express themselves and you have options and activities and things for them to do, and their quality of life and your quality of life isn't impacted by the environment, or there's minimal impact, then I don't think it's any more unethical than having pet dogs.
Yeah. I like how you framed that, Stephanie. I don't know if anyone else has to or wants to chime in with thoughts there.
Well, actually, I was just going to say, I used my first mentor trainer, Laura Garber, who works with her company as Wolfgang. She used to say she would almost prefer when clients didn't have a backyard. And the reason was that if you didn't have a backyard, you had to be actively engaging and walking and exercising your dog. You couldn't just open the door and put them out and make assumptions that, oh, I put them outside today, they got exercise. I put them outside today, they went to the bathroom. You had to actively be engaged in the meeting your dog's needs. And in some ways, she felt like that created owners who had more relationship and more involvement in their dog's day to day. And so in some ways, I think, you know, there's two sides to everything. And I think in some ways that is what an urban environment creates, is that as a dog owner, you've got to be on it. You got to be doing, like, it's not, you can't just open the door. You've got to do the things. Mm-hmm. And I think there's value to that as well. Certainly there's dogs for whom it is not a comfortable environment. It's not an environment that they can handle well. And that creates a different quality of life issue. But for the average dog who, you know, socialization-wise is okay with some of the urban challenges, or has lived in them and is acclimated to them, in some ways there are advantages to it in the ability to involve the dog in more things because it's necessity.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that was exactly what I was going to say too, is it's because you're forced to walk your dog three times a day or four times a day, and because there just tends to be more walking in general and going places where dogs are sort of welcome. Like, I know in the city or in a lot of cities, there's lots of places where dogs can go and can be welcome. So if you have like a dog who's fairly social and, you know, and likes going with you places and doing things with you, I actually think the city is really great because it is easier. And this, someone, well, we lived in the city for almost was it 17, 18 years? And we had a house in the Catskills. We did the country thing. And now we live in the suburbs in Westchester. So we've sort of done all three. The times where I was most consistent about walking my dogs and taking them out and doing things was when I lived in an apartment where we had to walk them every day. And now they get to go outside and they get to go in the backyard and do those things. But it's a little bit, and some dogs would prefer that, but I think some dogs actually like getting out and getting those, you know, several walks a day. So I think there's, yeah, there's pros and cons to it. But I do think that's one of the nice things about urban living is that it sort of forces you to get your dog out and do things. And if your dog likes that, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that, like, I like that, Stephanie, how you ended your answer with that, you know, it's as ethical as it is to have pet dogs in general, sort of. And I think the important thing about this question of should we have dogs in cities if they can have like a theoretical better life outside of the city is it's more like, do we believe that we can provide a dog with good welfare living in the city, right? Versus comparatively better or worse somewhere else. Because I think if we go down that rabbit hole, like there's always going to be some theoretical other thing we could do no matter where we live to make a dog's life better. And that would, I think, leave very few of us qualified to actually have dogs in our lives. So I think that, yeah, it's totally ethical to have dogs in cities. We just really have to be prepared to kind of step up and say, what does it take to provide them with good welfare in this environment?
When I was an adoption counselor for my local shelter, that was actually something that I had to defend to some of the administrators who were looking at an adoption application for a dog who was going to live in an apartment. And the bio of that dog said, I need a fenced yard. And I would have to say, like, this pet owner, this profile, they're prepared to meet this dog's needs. And I don't think this particular dog, that might be our ideal, that this dog has a yard, but I'm looking at this pet owner and seeing that they are well prepared to meet this dog's needs in an apartment. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think it's an automatic strike against having a dog if you live in an apartment.
Yeah. No, I love that. It's kind of that, like, don't let perfect be the enemy of good.
Yeah.
Right? Like you can provide a very good life for lots of dogs in the city.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And conversely, we do see dogs in rural environments that are not engaged with, that are left in the yard, that are alone for extended periods of time because dog walkers and those services aren't as readily available. So you could as easily argue that a dog in a very rural environment gets less quality of life for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But depending on the situation, the reverse can also be true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that leads us into kind of the next part of the episode or the next section, which is, you know, first identifying if there are realities that there are certain challenges or stressors that come along with city life. First, helping people identify and understand what are some of those biggest welfare challenges that we routinely see that city dogs face. And then we can kind of move into like, what can their humans do to kind of like tackle those challenges and protect and enhance their dog's welfare? Cause, you know, some of them seem pretty obvious, but some of them are like not as obvious to like the average dog owner living in a city environment. Because again, we're different species and we're going to perceive things about the city environment differently than our dogs. So when you all think about your clients, the dogs and humans that you work with, what are some of the biggest challenges you see pop up over and over again that are specific to living in an urban environment? Lauren, you want to kick us off there?
So I would say the biggest challenge I see in an urban environment is about proximity. It's passing multiple dogs in tight spaces, elevators, narrow hallways, places where there's not a lot of room to necessarily give your dog space or move around. Combined with the fact that in many cases, especially in elevators, but also sometimes in hallways, we're dealing with triggers and dogs and people popping out of doorways, the elevator doors open and boom, somebody's there. Those sorts of things I feel like are the biggest, or I would say the most common challenge I see for a lot of dogs, especially dogs who are potentially a little bit fearful, who are reactive to other dogs or reactive to strangers. Adding tight space to that equation makes it much more difficult.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that level of the inability to avoid what's either a specific trigger, as you mentioned, for like a reactive dog or a fearful dog or something like that, or just for your average sort of fairly social friendly dog, still that requirement. And it's almost like a lack of choice, like a lack of ability to create more distance or more space if you want to. You know, that proximity is forced upon you. And it's not that a dog living in the suburbs or living in a country environment also isn't faced with that sometimes. It just happens way less often. Yeah. So I think it's sort of the degree to which our dogs are confronted with that reality can be really, really challenging in the city. Stephanie, what else comes to mind for you?
I think along with that is just even the most resilient, well-socialized, bomb-proof dog, their sensory overwhelm that we sometimes take for granted. Like we're just so maybe immune to the urban noise and the, you know, just sort of the all of the things that we encounter that we don't consider until we're in the quiet of our own homes and we take a deep breath. We, with a dog whose senses are so much more sharper than ours, I think that sensory overwhelm is more likely to happen. And then if you have a more sensitive dog, like they're going to use up their spoons on a potty break versus let alone being able to sort of take a walk around the block. Mm-hmm. So I think that stands out to me as just sort of like getting back to the quiet of their home and having a chance to decompress.
Yeah, the sheer amount of stimulation sometimes is almost staggering, especially when I think we can notice it if we go outside of the city for a while and then come back.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my goodness, you're sort of slapped in the face with it. It's kind of how much it is. And I know we and our dogs can habituate to some of it, but not all of it.
It just becomes like a physiological, on the physiological level, day in and day out, not having a chance to have a break from that. And then if you couple a dog who also lives in a busy family with multiple kids and other animals and like really having a chance to rest and have a quiet space for their own. And I think with that is an undervalued and maybe underconsidered part of meeting your dog's needs when you live in an urban environment.
You know, one of the things I wonder about that as well, when we talk about kind of the sheer amount of stimulation, and for me, a lot of times what comes to mind is like all the noise and all the movement and all the people. But I think also sometimes one of the things we probably downplay is like all the smells that come along with city living, like the exhaust and the fumes and different things like that, that are uncomfortable for us, but they must be really unpleasant for our dogs too, day in and day out. I know there's lots of really interesting smells for them too in the city, but I bet they're confronted every day with a lot of pretty offensive to them odors that could almost border on like, I don't know if it would be physically painful, but certainly uncomfortable.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's something too, like even I think it's really easy for us as humans to forget just how much environmental pressure there actually is in an urban environment. Like, cause we're talking about smells and we're talking about, like sound. So that's sort of auditory pressure. And then there's like social pressure, cause you have to deal with a whole lot more social beings and it really adds up. And, you know, that can be, and we see a lot of dogs where like they came from a rural or suburban environment and they come into the city. Now all of a sudden they're leash reactive. They weren't leash reactive for 6 years. I mean, it's super common. And, you know, even as, you know, it's like someone who, you know, like I had a hockey concussion a number of years ago and was really sensitive to noise. And it really made me realize how loud that city is. And also when you're sensitive to noise, like how almost painful it can actually be. And so sometimes I really thought about that and dogs, and especially dogs who are noise sensitive. So if you have a dog who is noise sensitive, how we're helping them sort of cope with that. And that, you know, could be working with a veterinary behaviorist to help them, you know, through behavior medication and things that can really make a big difference for stuff like that. And so I think for me, it's like, it's just all of the environmental pressure and it's just extra stress that's taking that baseline stress level up a little bit higher. And so dogs just become more prone to reactivity or aggression or to fear, and just sort of struggling in day-to-day life. So I think that for me is like really the big challenge. And it comes out in a lot of different ways, but I do think it's sort of the environmental pressure that can be there that we just have to be aware of. And if you have a dog who's sensitive to that, what is sort of the game plan to make this a little bit easier for them, like on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah. And I think a couple of other ones that, you know, when we talk about why would, I think those are all huge ones. Mm-hmm. The other things when we're sort of quick to say like, hey, if we could blanket, if we had to choose city versus country for most dogs, one of the other reasons why we choose, say, country is there are often more opportunities for dogs to get some of those important, like species typical behavior needs met. Like it can be really challenging in the city to provide safe off leash opportunities, you know, dog park or not. One, because a lot of dog parks are like postage stamp size. Two, because there's lots of dogs who don't enjoy a dog park setting. And then if it's not a dog park, like what are the other options and are they safe and appropriate? So I feel like that can be really challenging for a lot of dogs. you know, the opportunity to really like get out and move their body freely and run or sniff or explore without being tethered to a 6-foot leash or an 8-foot leash. And then I think one of the other ones kind of built in there is like when you're living in the city, I think there's a lot less tolerance for some pretty normal dog behaviors. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So even what would be like an acceptable amount of barking at the door or at noises outside, if you lived maybe in the suburbs or in the country, all of a sudden becomes unacceptable because you have neighbors who are maybe complaining, you know, mm-hmm. and rightly so, that like the dog is disrupting their day, or things like digging or wanting to like pee on the flowers and the plants that are on the side, on the sidewalk, you know, those little tree sections. Like there's all these constraints about what otherwise would potentially be pretty normal or typical mm-hmm. levels of behavior that are suddenly not okay because they're in the city, you know, because they have other people around. So I think those are some other ones that came to mind for me as just extra challenges that we're faced with. Do we miss any?
I think it's interesting. Brian mentioned social pressure. And one of the things that I think is also a bit of a challenge, and I don't know if this is true in every urban environment, but I find especially in Hoboken and Jersey City, there's a funny almost expectation from dog owners that all the dogs should greet each other when they pass, that their children should be able to walk up and pet your dog. And there's a lot mm-hmm. less, I don't know if it's awareness is the word, but there's an expectation that is on dogs in that yeah. environment that they need to tolerate all of these things. And I have found that when I'm in less urban environments, people are a little bit more like, oh, he's barking, he's doing his job. That's what dogs do. Like if there's like a different expectation of dog behavior or of what's acceptable, not just because of courtesy to others, but it's almost like there's a greater tolerance for normal dog things in a less urban environment. And in the urban environment, we're expecting dogs to do and tolerate so many things that are sort of inappropriate in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would agree with that. 100%.
I think that's really well said, Lauren. I love that observation. I don't think I've ever really thought about it that way before. I thought like, yes, our dogs are tasked with having to tolerate a lot more because of kind of forced proximity, but that almost like urban mindset of dogs as like public property sort of, yeah. you know, or like there should be kind of public access to them isn't something I've really thought about specifically in that way. So I really love that you brought that up.
Yeah.
And it certainly is a challenge.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
It's almost like in the city, it's like the upside is generally dogs are very welcome in like a lot of cities these days, but that sort of social liberties, I guess, that people take with dogs, just sort of expecting, oh, like I love dogs and I love you yeah. and I want to pet you and do that. There's just, and even like in a city, like you do a lot of interacting with people, just like in the coffee shop and those, like there's a lot of just happenstance people that you run into or see all the time, or they've seen you in the neighborhood, and there's lots of good stuff with that. But I've never really thought about that, but I think that's really accurate, at least from my experience.
Mm-hmm. And even like the shame,
I love that.
The shame factor for the owners who have a dog who they're living in an urban environment and their dog is reactive or their dog is fearful. And there's like the pressure on the human with my dog isn't doing these things and feeling like, I mean, I've definitely seen clients and I felt it because my male dog has some of those issues, that feeling of like, people, you know, feeling like you're getting stink eyed or feeling like people are judging you or judging your dog's behavior is just a more prevalent thing. It's like, oh, your dog's not friendly. Oh, you know, like that's somehow your dog's terrible or that you've done something wrong. I feel like you feel that more, maybe just because of volume, but like there's for the human, there's an emotional toll to that too.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that you looped that piece in as we're talking about challenges for the dog right now, but there's a whole lot of challenges for dog owners as well, living in urban environments.
And for anyone interested in that topic, if they didn't listen to one of our previous episodes, don't worry, she's friendly. We talk a lot about that. So if anyone's listening and
mm-hmm. yeah,
that's what resonates with them, listen to that episode.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. So I know we've touched on it here and there already with certain types of dogs who might tend to maybe struggle or have a little bit more difficulty in the city, but I'd like to visit that a little bit and kind of the flip side of that as well. Are there dogs who we feel like tend to really thrive? And I know a lot of this is going to be individual kind of personality traits, but I'd also like to explore like, Do we feel like there are certain breeds that maybe are more likely or less likely to struggle versus thrive in an early environment? So maybe we can start with the breed or breed group question, if anyone wants to take a stab at that. And again, recognizing that every dog's an individual and there's no like, there's zero guarantee that any individual of a breed is going to thrive or not thrive in a certain environment. But like top of your list, breeds or breed groups that you feel like maybe have a more difficult time with some of the realities of city living. Who comes to mind or what types of breeds come to mind?
My first thought was our herding breeds, primarily because they are noise sensitive, as Sarah typically noise sensitive, sensitive in general, and having to track all of the moving things, which is, you know, sort of what they're supposed to do, can be really challenging, I think, for our herding dogs. And then speaking of proximity, sort of our working breed, guard breed dogs who are naturally suspicious of strangers or naturally want to keep their distance from strangers are going to struggle a little bit more, I think, trying to navigate the landscape. And then I also just sort of thought little dogs, but then you sort of want a subgroup of little dogs because not all little dogs struggle in an urban environment. But I just think from the impact of size and having, you know, navigating a bus station, if you're a Chihuahua, is certainly a different experience than if you're a 90-pound Labrador. So I think those are the three categories that came to mind for me.
Mm, I like those. I'll be honest, for the little dog one, and totally recognize where you're coming from with that one, with the environmental overwhelm when you're that small, because I agree with you, that's totally a real thing. I think I have a collection of little dogs that I feel like are more likely to do okay in a city environment, but totally depends. So like as a broad statement, I'm kind of split on that one. Guardian breeds. Oh my goodness. Yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Herding breeds for sure. And I think that comes back to kind of the pressure piece, like, because herding breeds are so sensitive to pressure and the application of pressure and the release of pressure, because that's sort of something they were designed to do themselves. And I feel like it really can take a toll of on them. And then all of a sudden, obviously all that kind of activation of like, there's something moving fast. I should try to slow it down, you know, and get a handle on it is certainly a big one. I think that I was going to say one of the other ones that comes to mind for me that's a little bit like, I'm curious to hear people's thoughts on this one because I feel like I might be an outlier of an opinion on this one. I do find that in a real or like real urban environment, weirdly, I find like, because you mentioned them, Stephanie, it's funny, like I actually find labs can have sometimes a hard time depending on the dog because holy cow, they have a lot of energy and a lot of enthusiasm. And if they, and this is the if part, if they don't have regular access to like off-leash time and play and things like that, I feel like some of them can get really frustrated and be like, become pretty like destructive and things like that, where you wouldn't necessarily, because they're so kind of happy-go-lucky, but they just have a lot of energy, especially in that early stage of their life. I think once they get older and kind of through that to like that 6, 7, 8-year-old age, then better suited. But I feel like a young lab or some of those young, super energetic, like hunting type breeds, gun dogs can also have a hard time in the early stage of their life.
Yeah. Like Weimaraners, Vizslas, German Shorthair Pointers. Those were some of the ones that jumped to my mind most quickly just because, they can be sensitive to some of that stuff. And then also like they just have so much energy. Mm-hmm. And I think some of them can be really prone to frustration. So I would definitely agree with you. So I guess we went through sporting breeds, we went through herding breeds, we went through guardian breeds. What do we have left?
And also I would say like dogs like sort similar energy level and who sometimes have like confinement issues might have a harder time, or like dogs like huskies can sometimes have a harder time, but that can go either way for me.
Yeah.
That just kind of depends on the individual.
Yeah. And again, I know every dog's an individual and there's lots of dogs, but
of course.
I would say like just dogs in terms of dogs that do well, if we're ready to move on.
Oh, well, I think we'll probably have more. I don't know if Lauren, you look like you're itching to chime in.
Oh, go ahead. You go ahead before I talk about what dogs do well.
Stephanie, like literally the words that were going through my mind were exactly what came out of Stephanie's mouth. Those like herding dogs was the first thing I thought of for sure, for all of those reasons. Herding and the guardian breeds. I've had a lot of firsthand witnessing of those types of dogs really struggling. But certainly any dog, regardless of breed, that is particularly high energy, high drive, I think can struggle, especially depending on the owner's ability to meet the dog's needs in terms of, do you have access to a space where the dog can truly run? Do you have the time and the bandwidth in your day to give them that amount of exercise that they need? I mean, both of my dogs were pretty high energy, especially in their younger years. And that meant at least twice a day, giving them a solid 45 minutes of play and running every single day. And for mm-hmm. some people, especially if you have children and young, like, it's a lot. That's a hard thing to do. And if you don't have a dog park around the corner, or if you don't have an area that's safe for your dog to really be able to stretch their legs out and really get some energy out, that's quite a challenging thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So thoughts on, I do want to talk a little bit too about sort of what are some individual personality traits that can really lead dogs to struggling. But I would love to hear from a breed standpoint, Brian, who you feel like typically can do quite well.
Okay. So these are my favorite. And in the city, just, you know, we've been training in the city for quite some time. I think we're at 15 years now. And again, our results are going to be skewed because of the types of dogs we see and everything. But my favorite dogs are Great Danes.
Favorite dogs for city living.
My favorite dogs for city living mm-hmm. are Great Danes, like the Havanese type dogs,
mm-hmm.
and Boston Terriers.
Mm.
Those are sort of like my three, the dogs that I have felt like consistently have done well. Now, I will say if you have a reactive Great Dane, like that's really, really tough because they're just so strong. Mm-hmm. But I have found like they tend to be pretty confident in the city. They don't need a ton of exercise. Like they come back in. And I remember one of our first, way back when, I remember at Instinct, like the largest dog we ever trained, or one of the largest dogs we ever trained, was this Great Dane. And it was like in the tiniest studio apartment I think we've ever trained in. And I remember us like trying to teach this dog how to walk on leash and heel and do these things. And it was like, what are we doing? But the dog did really well. So I think, but those are the three that pop into my mind that like, if I really had to think about the dogs that consistently did well, it was those three breeds.
Mm. I like that. I would toss out some city love to like the Golden Retriever crowd.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I feel like they're pretty adaptable in almost any environment, truthfully. And again, there's always exceptions, but I feel like there are a lot of them who are receptive enough to novelty. Like they tend to find novelty pretty interesting over the course of their lives. And mm-hmm. I feel like are more often than not pretty social. I feel like they tend to handle it pretty well. Again, knowing that like they're going to have higher energy needs when they're younger and things like that. But I feel like a lot of Golden Retrievers can do pretty well in the city. Yeah. Are there other favorite breeds that you all have? Favorite breeds for city living that you feel like, not even favorite from a like, oh, I love, these are my favorite dogs, but just like that tend to cope really well. I know this is a little bit of a hard question because our population of dogs that we see are typically going to be dogs who are having trouble in the city mm-hmm. or having trouble in those environments. But yeah, do any come to mind?
Well, the other one too that I actually think can really struggle in the city are doodles.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people think about them as city dogs. You know yeah. what I mean? Like, and there's lots of lovely doodles out there that do well in the city, but there's lots that, and I don't know if that's more, again, going back to like sort of like that poodle side, you know, that the sporting, you know, just like frustration tolerance, maybe a little bit more prone to anxiety, those types of things. Like I do find some of those dogs really struggle.
Well, and I think that coupled with the like energy enthusiasm that we talked about that can be present in like, say, a Labrador combined can make navigating all of the stimulation that comes in the city actually really challenging for a lot of them.
Yeah. Like generally
not to
speaking.
Mention.
Oh, so I'm sorry, Stephanie. I was going to say like, generally speaking, people say like, you know, would you recommend I get a doodle in the city? My general response is, if you're trying to maximize your chances of like not having issues, mm-hmm. I generally say no. Mm-hmm. But again, I know there's lots of doodle people. There's sometimes we go into Instinct and there's 40 dogs in there and 18 of them are doodles. So like we love doodles, but yeah, they can't find it challenging. Yeah. Sorry, Stephanie, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say the category of dogs who are more sensitive and struggle when you were mentioning Golden Retrievers and doodles. And my first thought is, but also if you have a dog of one of those breeds who are sort of expected to be friendly and social mm-hmm. and they're not. One of the main coaching points for my clients is watch how other people are what they do when they notice your dog and respond accordingly, because you're going to get the people who are walking along minding their business and they see your dog and they go, and I'm mm-hmm. like, the moment you see somebody make eye contact and look excited to see your dog, that's the moment to initiate your defensive maneuvers, because they probably have an expectation that yeah. they can say hi to your dog, because, you know, fill in X breed is known to be social. Mm-hmm. And so they would approach one of those breeds before they would approach a German Shepherd.
Yeah, I really like that. Speaking of dogs who may struggle in the city, just because of the necessity to wear a leash so often, I feel like a lot of shepherds yeah. can really struggle with being constrained and being yeah. really, really frustrated. And I know we kind of talked about guardian breeds and herding breeds. And to my mind, they're sort of that, like yeah. at this point in their breeding, they're kind of a mix of both.
Yeah. The other one, and I don't know if we mentioned this in our breed episode, but like bulldogs, mm-hmm. and I know, like the East Village in particular, we had numerous bulldogs that we think got issues like snapping at people and things, because when they were puppies, like everyone wanted to touch them. Mm-hmm. And like that, I love this. The East Village is probably my favorite neighborhood in the city, but for a puppy and a really cute puppy, like bulldogs, like, and it's so congested, everyone wanted to pick them up and touch them.
Yeah.
And I honestly really believe like there was a half dozen bulldog puppies that I work with that had issues around people and handling because they were touched so much when they were a puppy. Yeah. And the owners, again, like they're not doing, and the dog's not showing anything right. because it's like, they're just being quiet. They haven't grown into their bulldogginess yet to start being more proactive about keeping people away. Mm-hmm. And so I would say, yeah, like bulldogs in particular, I think they attract a lot of attention, like the doodles as well.
Yeah.
And if they are being pet all the time and they don't really like that, they can be really prone to developing issues.
Well, I really like that one, as it's not something from that standpoint about like the general bulldog temperament
right.
that's not aligned to city living. So I think for some of them, they actually can handle it pretty well.
I agree.
It's the attention that comes on them
yes.
that as an owner, you'd have to be pretty willing and ready to step up and advocate like, nope, they need personal space just like I do and you do and any other dog does. I don't want to dwell on this too long, but I will say one of the other ones, so long as folks are okay with setting general personal space boundaries, I feel like Shiba Inus can actually do really well in the city mm-hmm. a lot of times. Like in terms of handling generally the amount of stimuli and having it be relatively straightforward to meet their needs.
Yeah. Well, they're also really good at like, I feel like controlling, like looking indifferent to people too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, yes, they're not doing the big like waggy, hey, come see me. Now, a lot of people mm-hmm. really love Shibas and will still try to approach them. And I think similar to bulldogs, if they're having their space invaded a lot, you absolutely can see yes. issues develop there. But if you do just some basic level of advocating for your dog, I feel like a lot of Shibas can actually do pretty well in the city.
Yeah.
Yeah. So individual person, but before we move on to kind of like, how do we actually step in and protect our urban dog's welfare, protect and even enhance, you know, what are some of those individual personality traits that owners should be aware of that if they see in their own dogs, just to be mindful that like, hey, my dog in the city might find this extra stressful. So you should pay extra close attention to the next steps that we're going to talk about. Like, what are some individual traits that come to mind?
Sound sensitivity is a huge one. And dogs who are wary of novelty and wary of mm-hmm. interaction, like unsolicited interaction. So dogs who are really not comfortable being petted by anyone and everyone, dogs who need a bigger bubble of personal space than others. Those guys kind of, and it's, you know, that deceptive thing of, especially if you're transitioning from one environment to an urban environment, you know, there's that sort of buffer period where there's a few weeks where dogs' reactions can be a bit suppressed because they are mm-hmm. adjusting and acclimating. And so they can appear to be going with the flow for a little while. And it seems like we're fine, but we're not. And once the dog sort of unpacks and gets a little more comfortable, they may start to object to certain things. And you do sort of have to be aware if you know your dog's not a big snuggler, if they don't particularly, if they don't solicit pets from your guests, even if they're sociable to them, but they don't really want touching. Those sorts of things are things to kind of be aware of. Or if your dog, you know, gets weirdly nervous or uncomfortable when you bring a new box or something into your home, all the things they'll encounter on the street day to day in an urban environment could be challenges for them.
Yeah, agreed. Do you have other thoughts to add there about individual traits?
Stephanie?
No, those pretty much cover the dogs who are noise sensitive and sort of things out of the norm. Strangely enough, on the flip side, some of my sudden environmental contrast dogs, I think, would probably potentially do better because there is no contrast. It's all movement. It's all mixed in there. And so it's maybe they're a little more frazzled at the end of the day. But I think that that's what came to mind for me. Same as Lauren.
Yeah.
I have a couple, but Brian, you have ones you'd like to share as well?
You go ahead.
I think a couple that come to mind for me, and I think these came to light when we were talking about some of the breeds that maybe struggle, is if you have a dog who is high on kind of the impulsivity scale, right? Like if they have a hard time, they're really quick to kind of react to things, then all of the stimuli that just are going to pop up unexpectedly and all of the things that are going to be, they're going to either want to move towards or away from without a lot of forethought, if you're highly impulsive, can end up with a dog who's really frustrated really easily. So I think if you have a dog who you know is quite impulsive, be aware of that, because there's probably some extra work you have to do to make sure they don't develop sort of some frustration related issues involved in city life. And I think one of the other big ones is one of the scales that we use at Instinct for new clients coming in is something called the PANA scale. It's like the positive affect, negative affect scale. And it's about how dogs kind of interpret and perceive new or novel stimuli or different situations. And I think dogs that score high on negative affect can generally have a hard time in all environments. But in the city, really what that means is you're very quick to automatically perceive anything coming towards you as a threat. And so that in the city, when you're just faced with so much, can be really hard for some dogs. Like there can be a steeper hill to climb to even get traction there, because if their automatic outlook or perception on new things is, this is a potential threat, I need to put my guard up, then they can be walking through the day carrying around a lot of extra stress. So I think those are the two that come to mind for me, in addition to, of course, like the sound sensitivity. And
Yeah. The signs that a dog, or like the traits that might indicate that a dog is, you know, might struggle with an urban environment. I want to reiterate the sound sensitivity one.
Yeah.
Because that is such a huge sign that they probably need some help. And I think one of the ones, so if you see them like flinching a lot or getting nervous and doing that, even if they seem quote unquote fine, and I really challenge people, like if you're saying like, oh, my dog's fine, like really sort of examine that. Like if it means like, oh yeah, they startle a lot, but maybe they're not like trying to like flee at the end of the leash, or maybe they're not like hiding behind my leg, but like they're just like hypervigilant, noticing stuff. That stuff can seem really subtle, I think, to a lot of owners. And that sound sensitivity, and there's lots of things that can be done to sort of help with that, or like how we give them breaks from that. So I really want to stress that one, because I do think that's a big one. It's a big indicator of impact to welfare, in my opinion. And it's easy to see, and there's things that we can do. And so both through how we're setting up the environment, what types of training are we doing? And also maybe we're working with a vet behaviors to help them cope with some of that physiological response that they're actually having. So that's one. Frustration, I was going to say, which kind of goes back to your impulsivity one as well. And I would say like the third one that makes me really nervous is being suspicious of people. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you can have a dog that reacts to some dogs. Now, if you have a dog who reacts at every single dog, that's really challenging too. But if you have a dog who occasionally lunges or barks and does things, like I feel like that's more manageable. When they're really suspicious of strangers, it is really a challenging environment in the city, because, you know, there's so many cases where like people are just, they're doing good things, standing there, and people just come up and touch them, or like come up and we'll start talking to them. And life happens so fast. And for those dogs who are suspicious of strangers, and especially if their conflict resolution style is more like a warrior. So it's like, if I feel nervous, I'm going to lean into this and make you go away. It just introduced so much risk for people, but also if that dog bites, then like they're on the hook for that as well. You know, so in terms of what that means for them, and the outcomes that might mean. So I feel like, yeah, sound sensitivity, frustration, and being suspicious of people are sort of the three that jump out at me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And something you mentioned about the hypervigilance, and they think their dog, and if you think your dog is fine, I'm looking for dogs too on the opposite end of the spectrum, who are kind of just head down, ears back, and still and quiet and not interacting normally in the environment, just sort of trying to move through and stay small and quiet. Those dogs to me are sometimes the ones to really be aware of proximity and to move to the other side, because in a lot of ways, those dogs are showing some really subtle, well, maybe not so subtle signs that they are really struggling to cope. And it could take just somebody going, nice dog, to send that dog into conflict.
Yeah. And I love, Stephanie, you brought that one up as well. I think I was kind of thinking of that one too, Brian, when you were talking about like the sound sensitivity. And because I think sometimes those are dogs who are at risk as well of getting labeled as like they're stubborn or unresponsive because they're typically not responsive to cues. They typically pull a lot on leash because they're like physiologically, they're pretty aroused and amped up because they're feeling stressed. So they're just like, you know, ears back, head down, like you said, like I'm just going, right? Like I'm just moving forward as best I can. And so they are moving fast because dogs move faster than we do, you know, like as a general rule. And so like, they're not responsive to cues and things like that, but it's because they're stressed and they're really struggling. And I think, yeah, to your point, if you didn't know what you were looking for, that one can very easily and understandably fly under the radar for people.
Yeah. It's like, they look like they're going on a forced march through things. And if you're not aware of that challenge or what that body language means, then your dog could be really set up for a conflict right around the corner.
Yeah. And at the very least, even if they don't escalate into that conflict, they're still probably having a pretty crappy time.
And you mentioned pulling on leash, and I think that's another missed piece of information. If when I'm working with a new client who mentions their dog is reactive or sensitive, and they'll say, and we need to work on leash skills because they always pull in X situation, and I'm always finding out, do they pull more going back to the car? Do they pull more going back to your house or your apartment? And those are sometimes really key indicators that dog has been struggling, and now it's just a retreat to safety. And so we don't focus on leash skills and leash manners because now we're switching into your dog is going into survival mode and you just need to get them home and somewhere safe as quickly as you can.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. And one easy test for people, because some of this stuff can be really hard to see. Mm-hmm. Like honestly, like, and I even think back to my early days training, I missed some of this stuff. So like I'm in no place to judge, right? Like I missed a lot of these things, but one of like the really simple tests that we can do, and I do this with clients sometimes, is like when you take your dog out on a 20-minute walk in the city, are they actually sniffing and using their nose?
And like sniffing, not in that hyper frantic, like I'm hoovering the scent in my nose type of way. Yeah. Like that curious scenting sniffing.
Yeah. Curious scenting sniffing. Cause, and honestly, like the dogs who are really sort of struggling, like they generally are not going to sniff at all. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that's one thing you can watch out for is like, does my dog actually sniff and engage in like different things? Like, do they smell like the mailbox that was peed on 3,700 times in the past, like week and a half? You know, are they like sniffing in the grass? Are they like trying to find the chicken bone that's like left over on the, like, are they actually doing that and like seeking things out? Because like, if I see a dog who's not like sort of seeking out like, you know, smells and things in the environment, I would say, there's not many absolutes, but I would say this is almost one where like, if your dog is not sniffing at all, it's probably because like they are so hypervigilant and worried about things in the environment that like they just don't use that part of their nose. And I'm sure there's some that exist out there, but I think that's like a really easy test for people. Cause I've had people do that and they're like, oh yeah, like they don't sniff at all. Mm-hmm. Like they don't explore at all. Like they're not investigating their environment. And that's like a really easy one to watch out for.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, it doesn't mean that if your dog's sniffing, that automatically means they're okay and everything's fine. But if there's a complete absence of sniffing, yes, that's generally going to be a clue that they're not feeling great out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I love that. I love that you brought that up. So what are some ways, you know, we talked about some of the primary challenges, things like difficulty maintaining appropriate space or distance from things, you know, the lack of opportunity to go off leash, the lack of sometimes just general choice of behavior, the amount of environmental stimulation and pressure. What are some ways that owners in everyday life can protect the welfare of our urban dogs? Like, what are some simple, practical, straightforward things that we can do on a daily basis? We can say for the general dog, and then maybe some specifics for dogs who are on that end of the spectrum where they might struggle more.
One of the big things I think that in any situation, any training issue, any behavioral issue, I feel like the biggest thing or one of the biggest things owners can do is really start to understand body language signaling. Like start understanding the difference between my dog is tolerating being petted and my dog really enjoys being petted and getting attention. Mm-hmm. My dog is sniffing and relaxed and enjoying this walk, or my dog is frantically, constantly seeking because they are just desperate to get out of this environment. Like those subtle things can really be the difference between your dog being confident and well-adjusted and biting someone, is that you just being able to recognize, you know, my dog is letting this happen, but they don't like it. And I've definitely seen, you know, it's funny because we talked a little earlier about perceptions about certain breeds of dog from the perspective of people approaching you because you have this certain dog that is perceived as friendly or social. I have also seen that in the other direction, where an owner, it takes for granted, my dog loves meeting people. My dog loves meeting dogs. And so they're allowing it to happen nonstop, constantly on walks. And I have seen clients with dogs where the dog started refusing to walk. And it was just like the dog's like, I want a break. This is too much. And I just want to go home. Right. Like they just, it was like the constant stream of interaction. And it doesn't mean the dog didn't enjoy human interaction, but there was a point where the owner was almost letting too much of it happen. And the dog was just going, that's enough. Like that piece of body language and understanding, or having a trainer or behavior consultant help you recognize, what is your dog really like telling you or telling this person who wants to pet them? And then the tricky part for a lot of owners is respecting that. Because in an urban environment, to try to tell someone, you cannot pet my dog. My dog, you know, no one wants to say my dog's not friendly. But there's a degree to which we have to be able to advocate, even if it means maybe being a little socially, you know, less acceptable by saying this isn't okay. That's hard. It's hard for the humans, I think, a lot. And especially when you have certain breeds of dog that are just more commonly perceived that this should be okay. This should be allowed. That piece of really recognizing what your individual dog is handling well and what they really don't want, I feel like that's probably one of the biggest pieces of the puzzle.
Yes, I think understanding what your dog is actually saying to the world and to you is so, so important in knowing what to do next. And I think some of the stuff you touched on, if I really kind of think about this, like a lot of it is about if we're acknowledging that probably for a lot of dogs, being in the city is going to notch up that level of baseline stress. There are things we can do specific to like stressful triggers and encounters, but there's also this question of like, how do we just help lower the baseline stress level in day-to-day life? And like, what are some things that we can do there? I love, Lauren, that you mentioned like advocating for your dog's personal space and learning and using defensive handling outside. Right? Like putting yourself as a buffer between your dog and other triggers, like creating more space with arcing away or doing U-turns or things like that, even if your dog's not reactive.
Right.
Right. Just like generally kind of protecting their space, I think are huge ones. And I think related to that, when you're outside, is also like take treats outside. Even if your dog walks wonderfully on a leash, you know, or if they don't, like either way, take some food outside and reward them for paying attention as a thank you for putting up with everything they have to deal with in the city. And don't even think of it. You don't even necessarily have to think of it as a training exercise. Think of it as a stress reduction activity.
Yes.
Right. This is not about, I need treats to get my dog to walk well on leash. It's I'm taking some treats outside because it's an easy way to help my dog feel less stressed, to make walks a little bit more fun, a little bit more predictable, and to reinforce a really helpful coping skill, which is, hey, just look up at me if you have a question about something in the environment. I think that's such a simple thing that people can do to make a big, big difference in their dog's life.
Yeah. That was at the top of my list of practice engagement and providing direction, so that in itself can be inherently reinforcing for your dog. If, you know, they like training and they like, it's just part of the relationship and the, hey, I got you. And so if your dog does encounter something, even dogs who are on sort of the more resilient end of the spectrum, just knowing that they can perceive a potential distraction or a potential trigger and look to their handler and say, well, there's a thing, what are we going to do about it? And that can alone reduce a lot of dogs' distress, that they don't feel like they're sort of Fido Island at the end of the 6-foot leash and they've got to, you know, navigate all those things by themselves. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I also kind of look for ways that you can take decompression breaks. So if you don't have a vehicle, are there times when you can just go for, I call them business walk. So are there ways you can provide some breaks from the daily stimulus? Can you drive your dog somewhere or have a friend drive you and your dog somewhere versus walking through the neighborhood to get to that destination? Just what are those little micro moments where we can sort of ease those pressures we just talked about and highlighted in the environment, and then stay focused and scan and anticipate, you know, what's ahead, so that you can then support your dog through whatever level of challenge they find that situation. If you have a reactive dog, I had a client who lived in an urban environment, and she posed this so well. And she said, it's like I'm living in a video game that mm-hmm. I never wanted to play.
Yeah.
And yeah. So, you know, those, if you have a dog who's on the more reactive end of the spectrum, those tips and recommendations also helps reset your nervous system and give you an opportunity to not sort of go, oh, I got to take the dog somewhere. It's okay. We're just going to go out for a potty break, and we're coming right back in, and we can relax after that.
Yeah. Well, I think you just, you said it better than I'm about to, but we did a whole episode on leadership, and I feel like leadership sometimes, we talk about relationship a lot in dog training, and I think leadership has sort of fallen off a little bit just because it's been hijacked to do not nice things to dogs. But like the reality is like, I don't care. Urban dogs need a leader.
Mm-hmm.
Like they need someone, like to all the stuff you just said, Stephanie, like they need someone to and Lauren, they need someone to advocate for their space. They need someone who's going to do stress reduction walks. They need someone who says, you know what, you've had a rough couple of days. We're going to go for a bathroom break, and we're going to come back inside and do nose work, or we're going to do something else. If you go to a place where there's a lot of alcohol involved and people are just being really inappropriate with your dog, you have to leave or you know, put them in a different situation. You need to be reading their body language. Like they do need, like, and I know we lean on relationship a lot. Like I do in my mm-hmm. training. I feel like that's part of the environment that we work in. But And I mean this in a way like to actually empower people, because your relationship with your dog and building that trust that like, hey, like someone is looking out for me and I have someone to look to for direction. And it's not just someone telling me what to do, although sometimes that is important, right? And that can bring some comfort too, because it's like, hey, you kind of seem like you know what's going on and you're giving me some direction. But all of those things that you just mentioned, Stephanie, to me, that all comes back to like real leadership. Mm-hmm. And I know there's some dogs out there who do well, just sort of a more laissez-faire relationship and, you know, kind of go, they're just sort of resilient to the city. But I think the vast majority of city dogs really benefit from someone putting on that leadership cap. And if you're going to have a dog in the city, you are going to have to do things and think about things that maybe you wouldn't have to do in a rural environment because of the challenges of where you live. So that was one of the things and you said it way better than I did, Stephanie. I just wanted to add in, like, I kind of want to lead into the leadership piece there, because I want people to feel like I do kind of have to step into that role, especially if you have a dog with any of these other traits that we talked about earlier.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, if we think about sort of that leadership paradigm, or like the components of leadership as like safe, predictable, and helpful, I think like that requirement to be helpful, like to provide guidance and direction, just it comes to the forefront dozens and dozens and dozens of times a day in the city, whereas it may not come up nearly as often if you live in a different environment.
Yeah.
So I absolutely agree with you. It's so important. I think one of the other things, if you have a dog in the city, to kind of protect their welfare, is really making sure as much as you can also that home is actually a safe haven and a really relaxing place and like a respite from the things that they find stressful. So that might mean things like, you know, if your dog is doing doggy things and being really like alert to noises and like alerting on passersby, and you live in an apartment building and that's happening like over and over again all day, like what can we do to kind of reduce that with things like white noise or like a little gator airlock in front of the door or whatever it might be. You know, it's like, I think really making sure that when our dogs are at home, they do feel really relaxed and safe and comfortable, because they are going to need some time to recover and decompress from just the stimulation, right? Even if you have like the most extroverted dog in the world, they're still encountering a whole bunch of stuff outside and they need a chance to come home and just like breathe. So I think that's another one. And then Stephanie, like you touched on this with, you know, making sure you have opportunities for your dog to like get out of the city and things like that. I think in general, making sure that your dog has the opportunity to like move their body freely, whether that's off leash time or time on like a 20, 30 foot long line in like a quiet area of the park that, you know, isn't like an off leash friendly area where it's like safe for you to go and let them just move and sniff and explore and move at their own pace, I think is really, really important, both from an opportunity of like giving them chances to exercise more control over their behaviors, and also to just like do normal species appropriate things, like sniff something for 5 minutes that's kind of gross and then move on, you know, and like roll in something smelly and all that good stuff.
Yeah. And one of my, I don't live close there anymore. So I used to be nervous about telling people. I mean, I always would, but if you're in Manhattan and you really want like that sort of area, the North Woods in Central Park is probably like one of the most underused places in Central Park, in my opinion. And it's like a great place for that.
Especially like middle of the day when like, you know, it's furthest away from 9 a.m. So like some of the straggler off leash dogs have already like finally been put on leash. And then if you get later in the evening, some people jump the gun and do it a little early. So like middle of the day, I feel like is a safer time to do that, depending. Yeah. The weekends is truthfully kind of a crapshoot because there's going to be someone in there with their dog off leash no matter what. But,
but you will not find a more quiet area of Central Park.
Yeah, no, it's a good one.
The Northwoods.
It's a good one. Also, the Arboretum in Central Park is like on leash required, which can be really nice. Mm. So depending when you go during the day, that can be like a nice, if dogs are still allowed there, it's been a while.
Yeah.
But so I think those are, and I'm sure everyone has their individual recommendations. So if you're curious, write us, because we'll try to match you up with someone local who can say like, hey, go here with your dog for non-off leash, quiet, long line time. Well, I think one of the other ones, if we're getting into like some of the dogs who struggle more, and what are some things that people can do? I think being open to looping in a behavior consultant and being open to a conversation about if your dog really is struggling, right? If there are like quality of life issues here, if their welfare is really being impacted on a daily basis, you know, things like working with a veterinary behaviorist and considering something like behavior medication to come on board, because we have limited, there's a limited amount we can do to change the environment. The environment is, you know, the external environment. So sometimes we have to, is what it is. So sometimes we have to look at like, what are some ways that we can help our dog manage their internal environment? And we can do things like that through training and decompression and all the stuff that we talked about, but there are limits to it. So I think being open to potentially working with a veterinary behaviorist to help provide your dog relief from all the stressors they encounter can be so impactful.
Yeah.
In relation to that as well, I was going to say Brian touched on it when he was talking about the leadership piece, but I was going to say, anytime you can create predictability in whatever way you can do that is huge. And in situations such as like, when we get in the elevator, we sit in this corner, I step in front of you and we wait nicely together. And this is what happens every single time this happens. If the elevator doors open, I mean, this is some things I've had to do with my dog Bonsai. If the elevator door opens and there's a dog there, we hit the button and we go out the other side of the elevator if that's available. Like we have these little routines and things like, you know, Bonsai had to learn that when people were passing us on the sidewalk or something was going to pass us closely, he was taught a cue that was get back and wait, which cued him to loop around behind me and stay. And it basically, the routine of that started to give him confidence that when I get this cue, I know something's passing me close, but I don't have to do anything about it. And it almost created a prediction for him that what was about to happen was okay, was safe, that like he wasn't going to interact with them nor they with him, but they were going to be close and it was going to be okay. And that created, that predictability created a little bit more safety for him that made him feel more comfortable. In addition to, after working him through a lot of like sort of remedial socialization and training when I first got him, we did eventually come to the conclusion that this dog had limits to what he was capable of tolerating, and thus involving a veterinary behaviorist to help him with the internal part of that struggle and the anxiety and all of that had made living in the city for 8 years manageable. It still wasn't his number one choice, best life environment, but it made him able to cope with it. And likewise with what Sarah said, we also started to implement in the morning when it's quieter, less traffic, less people in the park. Like that's his big playtime. When it starts to get to after school time and after work time, it's potty break because there's just too many things. And just recognizing that this isn't when you exercise because you can't. So those little adjustments about how can we tweak the routine so that what we can minimize stress and create, you know, when there is stress, can we create a predictable coping skill, a predictable cue? Like all of those mm-hmm. things are just little tools that we can use that can just make it, you know, it might not be perfect, but we can make it manageable.
Yeah. That's wonderfully said, Lauren. Like, and I think a lot of that can be looped back to leadership again. And again, part of that being like knowing your dog's limits, like you said, and it's not a cop out to avoid the busiest times of day for walks.
Yeah.
Right. And you can still be working toward making them, helping them feel more comfortable while avoiding those most difficult situations wherever you can.
Yeah.
And when you can't, avoid layering in as much predictability as possible to help them through it.
Yeah.
And I like your point, Sarah, too, about, you know, reaching out to a vet behaviorist, because oftentimes that population of dogs, it may not have been an environmentally created anxiety. Generalized mm-hmm. anxiety is not necessarily always a product of the environment or how they're raised. And so those dogs are going to struggle whether you move to the country or suburbia or the urban environment. And so those are the population of dogs when I'm working with clients who are like, if we just, you know, if you could just live on a farm somewhere. And I have to tell them, like, your dog will still struggle on the farm. They just might not struggle as often or as frequently, but they're still weighed down by their generalized anxiety or that diagnosis. And so I think that's an important piece, regardless of the environment that you live in, to say, is my dog struggling mentally and emotionally and could be benefited from an appointment with a vet behaviorist?
Yeah. Like the urban environment can put a big spotlight on it.
Yeah.
And then I think almost on the flip side of that, it's like sometimes for those dogs where it is largely an environment created issue, it can be tempting to kind of say, well, he's fine though. Like he's fine when we go to the country. It's just the environment.
Mm-hmm.
But it's,
that's your world.
It's the environment. Like that's their world that they live in every day and that they have to cope with every day. So either you're planning to move outside the city, which some folks do, or it's, hey, how do we put in protocols and, you know, and training and potentially meeting with a veterinarian or veterinary behaviorist to make this world that he lives in feel safer and more manageable and less stressful? Mm-hmm. Because the environment is, I mean, it's not everything, but it's almost everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's huge. That is the world that they live in. Behavior is the interaction between the organism and the environment. So we can't just negate half of the equation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I love all of those things that we touched on in terms of like things that people can actively do to help protect your city dog's welfare. And I guess the other one I would just throw in is like really just pay attention to their preferences and what they love, because then we can open ourselves up to like the possibilities that the city does offer, right? Like, do they love to go watch like the birds in the pond in the park? Or like, do they really love to like go visit the hardware store and get a cookie from the counter? Like, is that one of their favorite things? Hardware stores in Manhattan are pet friendly. I don't know if that's the case.
And wine stores.
Yeah, those are like,
The liquor store is always.
They're like, the dogs are allowed in there. It seems excessively dangerous with like a lot of wagging tails. I know we used to take Buster to our pity and he had one of those like, you know, whip tails that like could crack a wine bottle if he hit it just the right way. But he used to love to go to the wine store. But, you know, like pay attention to what your dog really likes. And give them the opportunity to do that. And we talked about avoiding things that maybe are they struggle with or that they dislike, but like find things that they really like too. If they have a neighbor dog that they love, like schedule walks together. Mm-hmm. You know, if they have a particular area of a park that they really love, make sure that you get there several times a week and let them explore. So really pay attention to that piece of it. Yeah. Good. Well, if no one has final thoughts to add, I think I enjoyed this conversation. I feel like we had, you know, lots of stuff to go over and think about. And I came away with, I think, some new ideas and thoughts. And if you have city dogs, we've had city dogs for years. I think dogs can do really well in cities, just sometimes takes a little extra thought and planning. And hopefully this episode equipped you with some ways to do that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.
See ya.